We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrand. Joining me, as always, over there, beautiful, albeit humid, Chicagoland, the one, the only Dan Rubenstein. Sir, how are you?
I'm great. You're not in Allentown anymore. Because like that you used to say in beautiful Allentown, like you made allusions to that, but you are not in Allentown anymore.
Technically speaking, no, but I am very close. I'm a stone's throw from Allentown.
Is there a tri-state area? Is there like a name for the area that you're in, like that bridges together a number of different places?
I'm in the Lehigh Valley.
You're in the Lehigh Valley.
I'm in the Lehigh Valley, which. Bethlehem, Allentown, Easton are our big, Easton, of course, of Lafayette fame, obviously. Bethlehem of Lehigh fame, Allentown of Yaakko's fame, if we're being honest. The Lehigh Valley, yeah, that's my area.
The God's Triangle.
That's right, that's exactly what it is.
That's what everybody, all the locals call it. I like that clarity. I don't know, you know, because you're moving around. You're a mobile person. You have a house, you have a pet, you know, you're a grown up. So I like to know these things.
I am a grown up and I am wearing my sweaty, horrible golf attire that I wore at a golf tournament earlier today amid the humid conditions here in the Lehigh Valley.
I'm wearing a University of Vermont Catamounts t-shirt.
Yeah, that's of course. Well, yeah. Look, welcome back in. This is our Q&A show. We didn't initially plan on doing a Q&A show. We do have some coach interviews that we're going to run probably on our Patreon, which you can find at verballers.com.
Yes.
We had more that we wanted to do, but I think because the season is getting so close, Daniel, it has gotten suddenly much harder to interview some of these guys because they've got bigger fish to fry at this juncture. So for those who are paying subscribers on the Patreon at verballers.com, we are getting so close to the season, we may not have a natural spot to drop the show. We'll see what we can do, but right now that's going to be the new plan to drop it out there.
Mm-hmm.
We would also remind people, we've been teasing a thing for a little bit now. Just a
true.
A thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
We did the Guy Fieri show. I think much to our pleasant delight, it was received quite well. People liked it.
Yeah, of course.
People liked it.
People like Guy.
So they give us the benefit of the doubt, even when we do dumb things. I can assure folks that there is another dumb thing coming. Is there not?
There is. There absolutely is. Should we give details? Is it time?
We can't quite give all the details yet. Maybe we could
broad strokes?
Give a little bit more detail than we've been giving, other than how we've said it's just going to be something stupid.
Yeah. We're doing a highly specific season-long game that needs to be signed up for before week one. Yes?
That will be correct, yes.
We're doing a season-long online game that needs to be signed up for before week one kicks off the Saturday of week one. Correct.
That is correct. That is correct. So
it is involved. The prizes are unique to the Solid Verbal. You have never, ever, if you are have ever won an online game, you have never played one with the possibility of being awarded what we are awarding.
I would say that is 100% accurate. Okay. Yeah. It is available to our Patreon subscribers, verballers.com.
Verballers.com is the home of the season-long, unique, ridiculous, involved, incredible game that we are playing all season long. Deadline to sign up is before the first, not week zero, week one Saturday kicks off at noon Eastern.
That's all we can say for now. More details to come. But
yeah, eyes open.
Keep your head on a swivel here. We've got more to come.
Yeah.
So with that being said, look, today...
Congratulations, Skippy. You've got mail.
You've got mail on the Solid Verbal.
We put out the call a little bit ago to see if we could get questions from the Verballerhood far and wide. We went to Discord on the Patreon. Mm-hmm. We went out to Twitter. We went out to Instagram. All of these hotspots. We put together a document here of what folks want to know. This is probably going to be our last Q&A before the season officially kicks off.
Yeah.
Next week, it's week zero. I saw we got a question about the phrasing of week zero, the labeling of week zero, which I appreciate that question. So where would you like to start?
Well, we're starting with the Patreon Verballers. They get priority with their questions.
Okay.
Our Bruin A Discord channel, even though you're not drinking at the moment. I'm not having tea.
No.
I'm using my beautiful Solid Verbal mug. All right. Of these first-year starting quarterbacks, and this comes to us from Wes, who do you think has the best season? Bryce Young, CJ Stroud, DJU, Haynes King, Texas A&M, Emory Jones, Florida. So some recent and sort of modern powers in that list. Who is best set up both because of their ability, I guess in limited amounts that you've seen, and with what's around them and who's coaching them and what their schedule looks like and maybe track record of recent guys and who's developing them, who is best set up for being the best?
I don't think anybody with a straight face can look at you and say it's Haynes King or it's Emory Jones. We just don't have enough data. We have a little bit more data on Emory Jones, but we don't have anything on Haynes King. He might be great.
Counterpoint to that specific point. In terms of high-level quarterback development, the track record of Jimbo Fisher and Dan Mullen...
Very good. Very good.
...is legit excellent.
Legit excellent. And after I did the SEC East preview, we had a couple folks write in and remind us about that. How could you doubt Dan Mullen's ability to put together an offense, ability to coach up a quarterback? It's a fair point of criticism. But I think... certainly, as compared to the other three on this list, it's hard for me to go Haynes King or Emory Jones over DJU, who we saw.
Sure.
Threw for 400 yards against Notre Dame. It's hard to go against a guy like a CJ Stroud, even though we don't have any more data on him than we do the other guys. But I think the supporting cast is better. And certainly we know the same is true for a guy like Bryce Young at Alabama. So for me, I think the answer's got to be DJU. We know more about him. We know more about him. We know what he brings to the table. And we saw him in a little bit, saw him in some key spots last year, most notably in that Notre Dame game on the road. So he is my answer, I think, followed by Bryce Young, CJ Stroud, Emory Jones, and then Haynes King.
In that order. Emory Jones has seen the field a good amount as a change of pace type, mostly used for his legs. I think of these guys, CJ Stroud has the most proven talent around him and probably an outside of, you know, he has Oregon, presumably, you know, he's the starter, CJ Stroud. That's not official yet, but he has Oregon early, which will be a defensive challenge, with a tough front led by Kayvon Thibodeau. Bryce Young has a lot of the change just in terms of new offensive line faces in front of him, new receiver faces, although, of course, he has a couple familiar guys. And I, you know, there's the pressures at Alabama are unlike the pressures of any of these other schools, just because of the recent track record of national championship expectations. Haynes King doesn't necessarily have the proven receivers, but should have a decent enough offensive line and a good defense to put him in good position, field position wise, and good coaching, of course. Emory Jones is the big question mark to me, but I think has the most interesting combination of Dan Mullen, his own athleticism, the speed on the field that's expected from Florida. The offensive line should be pretty good. So there's really strong cases for all of these guys. The track record of Clemson producing receivers and what Clemson's schedule looks like, Clemson, after Georgia, I think I'm DJU, CJ Stroud, Bryce Young in my top three.
Yeah. And, those have to be the top three.
Yeah. And then Haynes King, Emory Jones.
I will agree with you to this extent, though, on Emory Jones. He is. And I know, look, Bryce Young's making close to $1 million in NIL endorsements. And CJ Stroud has the best wide receiver duo of any team in the country to work with.
Yeah.
That's a lot working in their favor.
And possibly best offensive line in front of him.
Best offensive line. For me, of all of these guys, Emory Jones is the most interesting. And I think that's because I hearken back to what I said during the SEC East preview. Emory Jones was a Mullen guy. From day one, he was the Mullen guy. I remember when they recruited him, when they flipped him from Ohio State, he's the Mullen guy. Put him in a Mullen system, we'll see fireworks.
He's also the one, because of your Mullen system illusion, he's the one who will probably be running the most. Dual threat, I don't think CJ Stroud or Bryce Young or DJU, I don't think the run game or Haynes King will be worked into their respective offenses like it will be for Emory Jones.
For sure. Much more of a dual threat guy.
Yeah.
So for me, how Mullen builds that offense, knowing that so much walked out the door from 2020, knowing that Emory Jones is going to be in charge of that, it's just supremely interesting to me. So regardless of Wes's question here, I think Emory Jones is the most interesting of those five is something that we should take note of as well.
If all goes right for all of these quarterbacks, who has the highest ceiling?
Well,
I think it's Stroud.
Yeah, because of the wideouts?
Because of both the wideouts, because of the line, because of what Ryan Day has recently done with both Dwayne Haskins and Justin Fields, that there's this really, really high-level track record. Not to say that's not true of Bryce Young, but it's a different coordinator. Like the continuity involved in Ohio State, that there is an element of, if CJ Stroud is as advertised, that means it's just fireworks nonstop. Whereas there's just so many new pieces. Not that that's ever been an issue for Alabama. I think DJU has the most intriguing, statistical element because of his competition and because he's just physically ridiculous.
He's huge.
I think I would go Stroud because, man, is it going to just like the pressure to follow Trevor Lawrence might be a little bit different than the pressure to follow Justin Fields because Ohio State never got over the hump, but Trevor Lawrence got Clemson there.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You know what, though? DJU is a cool cat. He seems relatively unfazed by that.
I still think there might be some rawness to his passing ability in the short term.
Okay. Well, we'll see. I mean, they have to develop some weapons for him out wide.
Yeah.
And that's one of the questions that we had about Clemson. Like, we know they have talent. That's never an issue at Clemson. Who will those main targets be? Yeah. So maybe he can develop them in very short order, maybe not. But for me, I still feel like the answer to both is DJU. I get where you're coming from on CJ Stroud, but
yeah. By the way,
Uyunglele at Clemson is my answer.
Uyunglele. And by the way, just in terms of dazzling plays, Bryce Young. In terms of individual wow factor, Bryce Young.
Yeah. All right. Where are we going next?
Let's go to, is there a week one game, Michael wants to know, that you are, quote, weirdly pumped for? One that may not be considered a marquee matchup, but something about it intrigues you.
Wow.
Week one matchup. You can pull up the schedule if you need to refresh. UCF Boise State, for sure.
Okay.
Is one that immediately I'm like, okay, we have two new coaches. We have Gus Malzahn, who, you know, has the reputation anyway for intriguing creative offensive systems, now with an experienced quarterback. Boise State looking to sort of jumpstart things after they've sort of plateaued a little bit. That to me is fascinating because those are two teams that are competing for New Year's Six attention.
Well, I've been going all throttle, no bottle on Louisiana versus Texas now for a couple weeks.
I think that's a great answer.
I think that's a very interesting matchup because Louisiana is loaded again. They're the number 23 team in the initial polls. I think that will be an interesting test for Texas in week one. Texas should win that game. There's no reason they shouldn't win that game. But Louisiana is very good. So that's one that jumps out to me. You know, West Virginia at Maryland is not necessarily a marquee matchup, but I feel like just through the course of our own previews, we had so many questions about both of those teams. Maryland, we feel really strongly about the job they've done on the recruiting trail. You know, like they've gotten some blue chippers that they're going to throw into the mix. They had one at receiver and now they've got one at linebacker. Like they're trying to build this thing. They've got Talia Tungavailoa, who I think rightfully claimed his spot as a starting quarterback going into this, well, last season, certainly now going into this season. But you've got that element on the Maryland side. On the West Virginia side, the question that we were asking through our previews was, which direction is this program headed? Is it going in a good direction for Neil Brown or no? So we, I think, will get an early tell as to what 21 has in store for both of those schools. 3:30 Eastern Saturday, what is this, September 4th on ESPN.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think Indiana, Iowa's not below the radar. These are ranked teams as Wisconsin, Penn State is, but Wisconsin, Penn State is that immediate, okay, what do they look like now that the sort of dust has cleared from their very off 2020 seasons? So that to me is fascinating. And then, yeah, Indiana-Iowa is a potential matchup of teams. Like, who can give Ohio State trouble this year, either during the regular season or potentially in the Big Ten championship game? I think that's fascinating. That you know, we've talked about LSU, UCLA. I think that's going to be fascinating. But no, those are the matchups that I think otherwise, you know, with UCF, Boise State, I'm like, okay, there's a lot of depth of interest to week one.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. For sure. Okay. Yeah. What's up next?
So the Unforgettable Fire, also from Patreon, has a football and non-football related question. Which active FBS player do you think would be best suited to compete in the decathlon?
Kyle Hamilton, next question.
It's a good answer. What are his measurables in terms of height, weight? It's like
I'll pull them up.
Is he 6'2", 6'4"?
I want to say he's like 6'4".
Okay, 215?
6'4", 220.
6'4", 220. I think that's right. You know, a safety with light linebacker size. You know, I would say, oh man, Drake London.
Drake London's a good answer.
A big receiver. So you've got the speed. I mean, Kyle Hamilton has that. Agility. So basically you want somebody with enough size to throw a shot put, javelin, discus, high jump kind of thing. So the field events and the jumping events, but at the same time to be able to sprint and run some distance.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you don't want too small. God, if I could get like a super fast, like Thibodeau's too big. Fast
Derek
edge
Stingley
rusher.
Derek Stingley is another one who comes to mind. He's but very light, fast.
But light.
Light, but. You
probably want 210 pounds.
He's a burner. Ran a 4.3.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle Hamilton's probably the answer here.
Kyle Hamilton's a very good answer. Yeah, I was thinking sort of somebody at a smaller position who's big. And that's, you know, Kyle Hamilton, I think, is an amazing answer.
I'm going to send you a tweet, though, from, this is from the official Ohio State football account.
Does it involve his GPS?
It does. No. Here, this is Master Teague.
Oh,
take a
okay.
look at that. That's a picture that, now, I don't know how they staged that photo, but he's doing the push-up thing where
the clapping,
he's—
clapping, yeah.
Yeah, propelled himself upwards, and he is very comfortably clapping.
Did
as
you
his
see
upper torso is in the air.
He would struggle with the sprinting and the distance running for sure. But did you see Evan Neal, who's moving, sliding over from right tackle to left tackle for Alabama? His vertical jump that ended in him doing the splits atop two piles of pads.
It's like just ridiculous.
Padding. Yeah.
Absolutely so ridiculous.
The agility there at that size, he would dominate the field events, obviously, against these guys. That's like, I mean, okay. Non-football, continue.
Because of that agility, I have him pegged more as like a Greco-Roman wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
At that size with that level of elusiveness, you know, that's
right.
That's of interest, but I don't know about decathlon.
Okay. Next question is a non-football one from the Unforgettable Fire. What are your feelings on root beer floats, Ty? Pro con and give detailed thoughts therein.
I'm giving a thumbs up to the camera for those watching at home.
Mm.
All in on root beer floats, Dan.
I'm not a root beer fan.
Really?
Yeah, I don't like root beer. I used to enjoy Coke floats, though, so I'm not anti-float. I'm just not a root beer guy.
I was going to ask if you were a Barks guy, if you were an A&W guy, what kind of root beer. Yeah, what are you into? But you're not.
No.
Really?
Doesn't do it for me. I don't know why. I've never enjoyed root beer. I like soda.
And I haven't had root beer in eons. Eons. I'm going to drink. That's what I'm drinking the next time. I need to get the old school glass bottle version of root beer and pop one open on a Brunei.
Spandrew, I want to know Dan Rubenstein's food plan for week one's games as detailed as you feel like going.
Whoa. So let me preface your answer by saying this. We are going to be posting out on solidverbal.com, as we've been now for the last couple weeks. We're going to be posting games to watch as we get closer to the season. Connor, who's been writing the five must-watch games for each conference, is going to do his thing and put together a really cool watch grid. So you'll know going into each and every week what your windows of opportunity are, what games you should watch at each juncture of a given Saturday. So you will have that as a guide if you are a Solid Verballer out there. You can always refer back to the site at solidverbal.com, and we'll clearly keep everybody alerted to when those are posted just for your own scheduling purposes. Have you looked at the schedule for week one and thought of it in terms of food yet? Is this the thing that you have done?
Yeah, of course.
On this now August the 20th.
I think about every event in my life in the context of how can I celebrate it appropriately with what I eat?
Okay.
Almost everything. I've already given thoughts to the Solid Toddler's third birthday, which isn't until January. What we'll be serving or making. So yeah, I've long thought about this. I think we'll probably, if I cook, it'll be pizza. If I don't cook, I'm thinking it'll be Korean fried chicken.
Okay.
I love Korean fried chicken, and that is an answer to another question we also received in terms of wing preferences. But yeah, there are a couple of towns that have a number of really solid Korean options. And Korean fried chicken is just, it's double fried, so it gets amazingly crispy. And there's great dipping sauces if I get some sort of side fries. I love kimchi. I love everything about it. So that's probably the direction I'd go in. Now, the issue is, I would probably wait for that until later on in the evening. Because you eat too much Korean fried chicken, you're down for the count. The sweet and spicy and the sort of the heaviness of fried chicken. But yeah, that's where my head is at the moment, a couple of weeks out.
So what will your watch arrangement be now that you're in Chicago? Now that, hopefully it's safer to have people over to watch games with.
Yeah.
Do you have a plan as far as that goes? Because that was a big deal for you in New York.
Yeah. I don't really have, I'm trying to think. I have a couple of friends who are fans of specific teams. Notably Michigan in the area. I have a Michigan friend and a Wisconsin friend. But I don't have diehard college football people. I have writer friends in the city. I'm in the burbs. But I don't have anybody who I can think of off the top of my head who just wants to watch college football all day or can watch college football all day
or
because they have small children. Yeah.
Usually that's the way it works.
So my watch setup this year is probably going to be mostly solo and mostly in my bedroom. I have a desk in there. I moved an older desk in there when Jody with an I was working from home. She's now working in an office. But I'm probably going to isolate myself in there because otherwise there's just going to be a TV on with football all day and trying not to let a 2-year-old watch football all day.
Will you not take the opportunity to introduce the Solid Toddler to the great game of American football.
Oh, he watched last fall. He was not yet two, so I don't know how much it resonated with him, but he recognizes what football is, and I've watched clips with him, things like that. I just don't want to have him in front of a TV all day on Saturday, especially it's still nice in the fall. I want him outside. I want him doing great stuff. So, yeah, that's the move. He'll see some, and I'll probably, you know, show him some Oregon, and he knows how to say go Ducks, and he has some Oregon gear. But no, just in terms of distraction, I'll probably isolate myself with a desk in front of the bedroom TV and, you know, set up some sort of secondary display at the same time.
So as a Southern California native who went to Oregon, moved to New York, and is now transplanted again in Chicago, what will you do when it comes to the solid toddler's rooting interests? Will you drive a hard bargain with Oregon? Will you throw him into the tide that is the rabid Northwestern faithful out there in Chicagoland?
Yeah.
Will there be Michigan influences, Wisconsin influences, given where you're at, Notre Dame influences? How are you going to handle that? Have you thought about it?
I don't really have any Notre Dame people in my life of any consequence. Maybe I'm forgetting somebody. There's Michigan people. There's a couple Wisconsin people. There's a couple of Lion-I, but I can't wait to take him to a Northwestern game. It certainly doesn't have the overwhelming atmosphere of some of the other Big
Family
Ten schools.
Family-friendly, right?
Family-friendly. I mean, it's also very close. So it's very convenient. So I can't wait. But he's too young right now. He's 2.5. So I'd be thrilled if he were a Northwestern fan. That'd be fine by me. He's going to watch and know a lot more about Oregon football. He will be an Oregon football fan. I'm sure he'll have a soft spot for Michigan because of Jody. But no, I mean, she doesn't have a lot of advanced thoughts on Cade McNamara or Aiden Hutchinson. Right. So she roots for Michigan. She wants Michigan to do well, but she's nowhere near a diehard.
All right. Where do we want to go next here, Dan?
I don't know. You tell me. You have the document too.
I have the document. I'm actually going to pull up some of the stuff.
I've got Cam, by the way. If college teams could make trades, what's a trade that would help both teams? We used to do episodes about this. We used to do trade-specific episodes.
It's true.
Benefit if a team was deep at a particular position and could afford to lose somebody that would help another position group. Which teams are a quarterback away, a dynamic receiver away, an edge rusher away? I'm putting you on the spot, I realize.
Yeah.
But of the major teams that could compete to win a division, a conference, whatever. I'm not talking playoff, because the teams that are capable of winning the playoff are not really a specific position away.
Right. Wow. Well, I mean, you have plenty of options when it comes to quarterback play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have talked about teams like Iowa, who I think could fall into that category. That might be low-hanging fruit. But
it's also, you know, the context of Iowa, too, is how much are they going to weaponize that quarterback? How much are they going to open up that offense for that quarterback?
Totally
All due
fair.
Respect for the fireworks of the Brian Ferentz system.
Totally fair.
Yeah.
But I think of when I specific needs, like Northwestern could be another one of those teams, right? And it probably is the same conversation as Iowa.
Right.
How are they going to weaponize some quarterback, an unnamed tradable commodity that is not, you know, whatever they've got now. Hunter
but
Johnson.
I don't, is Northwestern really a quarterback away from winning the Big Ten?
I mean, probably not.
If Northwestern last year, and they were competitive against Ohio State, until Trey Sermon arrived in the second half, if they had replaced Peyton Ramsey with who's demonstrably better, but not an absolute stud, like DTR from UCLA, if they had replaced him with Kellen Mond, if they had replaced him with Will Rogers, if they had replaced him with whoever, are they really competing? Michael Penix, are they competing with Ohio State
right.
in the end of that game? I don't think so, because I don't know if they had all of, you know, Cam Porter was good and he's now hurt. So I think Northwestern sort of already has reached their ceiling as a threat to win the West.
Yeah.
But I don't know. They need a lot more, I think, to get over the Ohio State hump.
Yeah. I need to think more about the trade question. But
okay.
It is one that we have tackled numerous times on this show. And
like if Northwestern had Kyle Trask, I still don't think
I don't
so.
Know. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a different, if it's a different question, if you phrase it as who needs to make one trade to put themselves over the top versus who are some optimal trade candidates, you know, like that, what you're really getting at there is who is the linchpin, right? Who is going to create that tipping point that is going to take a team over the top.
I need to
think more about that.
It's easy to like, so obviously Alabama's deep everywhere. So who could use, say, a running back? Who could use Brian Robinson or Jace McClellan that ultimately, if Alabama were to lose one of those guys, Trey Sanders, I think, is finally going to play after dealing with injuries. Like, to me, Wisconsin is a team that needs...
Wisconsin? Yeah.
That needs that stud at running back, obviously, to make things go. Alabama, for sure, deep there.
What about Michigan at quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, there's so much unknown about the Michigan defense to know whether or not they're a quarterback away. But who's got a quarterback to spare?
No. Well, that's the problem, right?
Georgia, I suppose. But those guys are unproven behind JT Daniels. So Michigan already has their own unproven blue chip quarterback waiting in the wings. So I don't know. I guess the other question is who's got a really good quarterback but is just too far away even with that really good quarterback? Unless you're like, okay, whoever loses the Texas competition, or if you want to take a chance on... what's the guy, the freshman at Oklahoma, the guy waiting in the wings? But yeah, I mean, I guess you would have to take a chance on an unproven guy like that.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Jared Knight says, what should polls measure?
What should polls measure?
So, big news story this week, if you want to call it that. The AP released its poll. We talked it through with Jeff Schwartz.
Yep.
How do you feel about preseason polls? Where do you think their place in the sport is now, should be moving forward? And is it at all an accurate measure for determining who's good and who isn't?
So the preseason poll is not a definitive ranking. It's taking the temperature of the media room. It's just how people interpret where programs are at heading into the season. It's not saying we think this is definitively how the season's going to end. It's this is where we believe programs are right now and how well built they are right now. And I think there's a slight difference anyway there. It's not a predictive thing to me. So it's there for conversation. It's there for status of the sport, there for status of the top teams in the sport. And so I agree that it should exist. I agree that preseason polls should exist because I think it's an accurate bellwether of reputation and interpretation. But what is the point of them? What should they measure? I don't know. It's a ridiculous and wild sport. I like that there's subjective elements to it. I like all of these things during the regular season. I like the back and forth. I don't know. What do you think they should measure? Like we have things that are, if you want cold, hard numbers, we have SP Plus, which is a predictive rating system that uses advanced data. And it does a really, really strong job of doing so. You can go in and find more accessible things. Like I'd like to do with Danalytics, of points per drive that gets rid of garbage time and adjusts sometimes. I think some of them adjust for opponent. But even if they don't, as long as they're not measuring it against FCS teams. I like those things as indicators, but those remove context, whereas the AP poll, hopefully voters who are able to watch and read and interpret include context in their rankings. So what should it measure? I think it just measures people's opinions. I don't know.
I hate polls. I hate them. I think it's largely a creation of the media so that the media can feel self-important.
Yeah, but
that does not mean they don't have a place.
Right.
Does not mean they don't have a place. And I do think providing some context is important. So much of what we do, part of the reason why we do point spreads when we talk through our previews, we're trying to provide context for people who maybe aren't as in the weeds, trying to get a better sense for who's good and who's not.
Right.
So I do think it's a valuable measure insofar as it provides context for people who follow the sport casually or even not so casually. It's got its place. What really bothers me is when people lean on the polls as like the thing. As the thing. As something more than just a way to measure opinion. I hate that. That's part of why we have this dispute all the time around the playoff. I want to see them battle it out on the field.
Right.
You don't so much care about that and you're okay with not having that element of it. I hate anything that makes it feel like ice skating. No disrespect to ice skating. I hate that.
I have noticed that I think people care less about the AP and coaches poll now that those are not part of a determining factor for the postseason, like it was with the BCS.
Totally.
Like I don't see people getting riled up that Team X is 14 and Team Y is 18, even though Team Y has a much better resume. I don't see that much anymore. So maybe the polls to you are given an appropriate amount of weight, where it's just like, hey, bro, that's just like your opinion. So I don't know. I feel like they're in a pretty good place, polls, and just in terms of like, it's a conversation starter, right?
It's I'm fine with it.
We use this top 25 as a, this team is number 21, but they're playing like a top 10 team. Like I think its sole purpose is to start conversations. That's it. And I think it does a good job of it.
It is totally a conversation starter. All I'm saying is I get uncomfortable when people lean on it more heavily than that. When they want it to be something more.
But what do they want it to be at this point?
Look,
they want it to be gospel, what you were ranked in week 8?
You could read any number of team sites, any number of college football media sites throughout the course of a season. And the amount of weight that polls are given, the AP poll, the coaches poll, it drives me crazy. It doesn't mean anything. It's a measure, it's context. But the polls, you can't lean too heavily on them. And that's what I think drives me crazy.
Can I tell you that I think we think about the polls, you and I personally, as fans of teams who have, you know, pretty often in this last decade been in like the top 5 or top 10 in Oregon, Notre Dame, and Penn State. And I think if you are an Indiana fan, if you are a Texas Tech fan, if you're a Cal fan, if you are a NC State fan, that if you find your team ranked in the top 25, the top 20, the top 15, there is a pride and status element to that that I don't think fan bases take as we are now a big boy. We are now a national championship contender, but in much more of a how cool is this kind of feeling. And I think that's important. I think that's important to be like, isn't it cool that we have our act together? At least we have so far for this stretch that we're ranked number 14 in the nation. That's cool. And I think that's the point. And that's the real appeal of the polls, to take a look at teams and say, here's a tip of the cap your season has ruled thus far. Awesome. Good job on you. Isn't that worth something?
That is worth something.
Yeah.
For sure. And so, yeah, whether it's status and programs are able to build and create momentum.
If you are one of those schools that I mentioned, or if you're like Ohio, if you are, you know, a G5 program and you're recruiting every week and all of a sudden you're a top 15 team playing another top 15 team. And guess what you can do that week? You can center your recruiting year around visits in that huge game. That's a big deal. That you can sell your place as a big time school where top 15 matchups happen. I think there are just sort of reverberations and tentacles.
There are benefits from the perspective of a program.
There's status momentum, I think.
For sure. I am looking at this from the perspective of a fan, and I think it's important context, but inevitably it will happen. People lean a little too heavily on the polls, and that's what drives me crazy.
That's fine. But
all right.
Yeah, I think the more conversations around more teams that happen because of polls, the better. So I'm good with it.
Let's go to this question here. Yeah, I got one here. Then we can go to one of the other ones in the document.
Sure.
From Instagram, what is the most spoiled fan base, Dan?
The most spoiled fan base?
Most spoiled fan base. So spoiled is doing a lot of work there. What does spoiled mean?
I think it's Ohio State. And it's easy to say Alabama because they're used to winning national championships. But I think spoiled both means an unbelievable amount of winning, but also there's another element to college football joy, Ty. And you won't fully understand this as a Notre Dame fan or a Penn State fan. But college football is not just about watching your team win. It's about watching your most emotional rival lose and embarrass itself. Auburn, right, with regard to Alabama, Auburn, even though they've had lows, they've beaten Alabama more than once in the last few years. Auburn has been to a national championship, has now won a national championship. I guess it's not a decade, but it's 11 years. So the joy of Alabama fans directed at Auburn embarrassment is not as pronounced to me as Ohio State absolutely dominating the Michigan rivalry, absolutely dominating the Penn State rivalry recently. I mean, Penn State has won and jumped up.
Sure.
But also that they're recruiting on this unbelievable level and they're a perennial playoff team and they've won a national championship in the last, 6 or 7 years. I think Ohio State right now, as a team who has absolutely pulled away from the rest of that conference, I think their fan base is probably the most spoiled. And I don't say spoiled in a negative way. I just think it's an embarrassment of good times.
Yeah. Ohio State's a really strong answer. And I think in earnest, the answer has to be either an Ohio State or an Alabama or a Clemson.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can pick anybody else. I think it's one of those three.
Yeah. No, Ohio State as that recruiting juggernaut, the NFL draft juggernaut, the rival not succeeding juggernaut, coming close, but kind of juggernaut. Yeah, I think it's the Buckeye fans are probably the most spoiled in terms of what they've been able to experience these past few years. Next
question. Did you have a question?
Yeah, Court wants to know, is the NIL... I don't know. It's funny that NIL has now become like an adjective, a verb, a noun.
Right.
Is the idea of athletes profiting off of their name, image, and likeness a fad, and things will calm down, whatever that means, in the coming years?
Yeah. So, I mean, it is a bit of a sugar rush right now, isn't it?
Totally.
If you listen to our friend Andy Staples, who we had on the program right around the time this went into effect, he thinks that there is a sugar rush quality to it, and that eventually some rich boosters, rich company men will get tired of losing their money, will make a bad call, will sign on with a college football player that lets them down,
mm-hmm.
and there won't be as much money, there won't be as much willingness to throw money at student athletes at some point in the near future. There is another school of thought, which many have trotted out there, that this is the end of college football as we know it.
Right. Well, I mean, it's ridiculous, but yeah.
I think I fall somewhere in the middle.
You think that there's an element that NIL will ruin college football forever?
I think what it's doing is it's removing a Band-Aid. It's removing a pretty little faceplate from college football that we've had for the last 50 years, certainly for the last 25, 30 years.
Right.
And that thing is that this is actually semi-pro football. It's semi-pro football. Mm-hmm. We dress it up as being tied to an institution and that there are academics at play. And I'm sure for a lot of these student athletes, that is still a very important thing. I don't mean that.
Mm-hmm.
But this is semi-pro football. And the fact that they can now get some compensation based on their name, image, and likeness is a really big step. It's a really big step in, I think, revealing college football for what it actually is, semi-pro football.
Sure.
What comes of that in the future will be very interesting to me. But I can't help but feel like the combination of things that went down over the last year, not the pandemic, NIL legislation going into effect, the one-time transfer rule, those two things happening in tandem, I think makes this a lot more semi-pro-like than it's ever been before. And I know this is only the tip of the iceberg. And I don't know where that goes, but I think that uncertainty and maybe any angst that you feel about it is warranted. I also do think that Andy is right to the extent that Bryce Young making close to $1 million, that may not be a thing a couple of years from now, because part of this is going to be marketing firms studying the true brand power of a college athlete in Ames, Iowa, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
It's going to take some time to actually run the numbers and figure out what the ROI is on that. So I think I trend a little bit, if you're looking at this in terms of a spectrum, I trend a little bit more on the Andy Staples side that it's going to dry up than I do right. It's going to ruin college football. But I am certainly somewhere in the middle.
So I don't think it's going to dry up necessarily. I think because sugar rush is an interesting term. I just think both the people paying. So for example, brands, either we saw a thing with BYU player walk-ons getting their scholarships paid for, like, oh my God, that's the end. Is this what we really want? And like, okay, it's fine. Relax. I think the big thing is everybody's just going to get savvier. Everybody, like the players are going to get savvier across all sports about their finance and their revenue streams. And I think brands are going to be savvier because if they don't feel that they're getting a good return on investment by saying, okay, we are paying this popular quarterback X amount of dollars for pushing, you know, this, you know, iced tea on Instagram or something, they're going to stop paying. But what I think is going to happen is in the same way that all sorts of people are making money online, I think athletes are just going to get savvier. Like, okay, so is Paige Buchers from UConn, like the star basketball player, the younger player who's got a huge Instagram following or whatever, social following, is she going to start appearing at basketball camps? Like, I think Right. There's just going to be elements of, especially as hopefully, knock on wood, the world continues to open up and become safer and safer these next few years, that speaking engagements, all sorts of things are going to come out where people, you see like celebrities making a ton of money. Coaches are on that speaking circuit. Are players with big engaging personalities? Sure, why not? I think that's going to be the thing, that there is going to be not just like, hey, Kool-Aid McKinstry at Alabama now has a Kool-Aid deal. What does that mean? Like, is he just doing an ad and that's great? I think there's going to be, you know, I don't think players are going to start OnlyFans necessarily, but or Patreons or whatever. I think there's just going to be every year a different player is going to use his or her brain and think, oh, what if I do this? And then there's going to be a sugar rush in that industry. I think there's just every year there's going to be changes about how athletes are creative about this kind of thing that aren't just saying, I am partnering with Zaxby's, right? I think there people are just going to get savvier. They're going to start YouTube channels and they're going to do brand deals through there where they're just, oh, here's a Georgia player who has a YouTube channel and is going on a tour of the Coca-Cola factory. And it's sponsored by, like, there's just going to be like experiential elements to how these people, that's a weird way to phrase things, how players, athletes make money.
Fair point. Okay.
So I just think, I don't think it's going to calm down. I think it's just going to keep evolving.
Yeah. Well, it certainly is going to evolve. One way or the other, it will evolve. And look, I also don't, I don't want to be misinterpreted. I'm a huge proponent of NIL.
Totally.
I think it's long overdue. I think it sucks that players have not been able to do this sooner.
Mm-hmm.
I do think the next big frontier will be merchandising. And, you know, I know there's plenty of wheels in motion on this front already.
Sure.
But being able to get a cut of your jersey sales from the official team store, that sort of thing, that impacts the bottom line.
Yeah. Those are co-licensing deals with the players and the schools. I saw Breaking Tea did one with an Alabama player where there's like the Alabama A on his jersey. That's, I mean, it all makes sense.
Once we start talking about like official team apparel, though,
mm-hmm.
that to me is very interesting and where that goes next.
By the way, it's also going to apply to, I think, if a player produces a product, right, that has something to do with, that takes advantage of the fact that they're an athlete, they're able to sell that product. You mentioned t-shirts, but it could be whatever. There's a giant spectrum of things you can, of merchandise. Next question. Let's stay on that first. I think this is a fascinating question. Which player from the 1990s would have made the most money under today's NIL rules?
From the 1990s?
From the 90s. So if we're going to say this player's fame and reach and influence from the 90s, which is kind of what it takes right now, fame and reach and influence. So like probably a major school or have like a big, well-known national name, which it was obviously different in the 90s to sort of cultivate that. Which player in the 90s, like, you know, Tim Tebow is an amazing answer from the early, you know, the 2000s, but from the 90s specifically, my answer is Charlie Ward. Two sports star, major program, good personality. I think, you know, would have resonated with people from coast to coast, was on national TV, so was a household name. Do you have a name?
Wow. What a good question. I think
also was just like, especially with kids, I was probably 10, 12 years old where I was like, that dude rules, right? Like that's a dude I want a poster of. I will buy a Charlie Ward poster. I will buy a Charlie Ward signature shoe. That like, there is that electricity to Charlie Ward.
Peyton Manning is an interesting one.
It's not bad.
Ricky Williams.
In. Mm-hmm.
Ricky Williams, mid to late 90s at Texas, I think is another one. I don't know about Charles Woodson, but obviously Charles Woodson was
a good answer. Big personality.
Big personality. You know,
Desmond Howard could have sold little Desmond Howard bobbleheads with like the Heisman pose.
Tommy Frazier had a moment.
I don't remember his personality, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't either. But I think the obvious answer for me is probably Ricky Williams. You know, once you start talking about guys like LeVar Arrington, that's more local to this part of the country. But Ricky Williams really had broad appeal, if not for the fact that the Saints traded away an entire draft to get him, right? So and he was kind of an eccentric personality. I think Ricky Williams is my answer.
I think Michael Vick would have been a good answer. Late 90s, of course, he was in college. I'm looking at a list right here. The best college football quarterbacks of the 90s. Steve Young at BYU, obviously resonating with a very specific group of people, but I don't know if he had the star power. Danny Werfel, I don't remember having a big personality. Dante Culpepper, smaller school. I'm looking at these names.
Eddie George?
Personality.
Was Eddie George in the 90s?
Eddie George is an interesting answer.
Yeah.
Huge school. I think I'm going to stick with Charlie Ward, though, because
Charlie
of the
Ward's
style of play and because of the two sport element. Like there's, you know, Bo Jackson at the time in like the early to mid 90s popping in both baseball and football, and Deion Sanders. Like those are two guys. You're like, OK, this is a unique two sport guy. That's my answer.
Ricky Williams doing Head and Shoulders commercials would have been quite profitable.
Sure. Absolutely.
Akin to Troy Polamalu. Continue.
I disagree with the premise of this question, but I'm going to indulge it anyway. I'm going to humor it anyway. Who is the biggest sleeping giant in each conference if everything perfectly fell into place? Brock wants to know. Sleeping giants.
Sleeping Giants. Okay.
I'll define it as a team who has not won the conference at all recently, but has the clear potential to be a perennial challenge and winner.
Okay. So let's start in the ACC. Do we go North Carolina?
Football-wise? I think it's Miami. State? Miami has never won the
Miami?
ACC. I don't think they've ever won the ACC.
They haven't. They have not. All right. I'll go Miami. Miami's fine.
Yeah.
SEC, A&M?
Yeah. They're ascending. Florida is already clearly a giant just because of what they did with Urban Meyer.
Right.
Auburn has won a national championship and competed recently and won the conference recently.
I think it's got to be A&M.
Conference, excuse me.
Got to be A&M out in the SEC West.
Yeah, but A&M is, I mean, they're sort of defined by how asleep they've always been, that they've never actually shown the ability to get over a hump, whereas Miami did. I'm trying to think if there's anybody else who's truly like, yeah, I guess it's A&M.
I think it's got to be A&M.
I don't think Arkansas has the ceiling. I don't think the Mississippi State have the ceilings to be a giant, however we're defining that. Probably not Auburn.
Let's go to the Big 12. Big 12's much more interesting.
It's Texas, yeah.
Yeah, you think it's Texas, a sleeping giant?
Yes. We make fun of the phrase Texas is back, because the reality is Texas is not back.
Right.
So they are the school that, if all falls into place, we know they have national championship potential because they've won the national championship this century.
Texas. I was going to say TCU, but
no.
Texas is fine. I could go with that.
Yeah.
Out west, is it USC?
Yeah, I don't agree with UCLA as a sleeping giant. I think Washington is interesting with the right guy, but I don't know. USC is probably my answer, yeah.
What about the Big Ten?
The Big Ten's sleeping giant is probably Penn State.
Yeah. I think Penn State or Wisconsin.
I think Penn State's name strength for recruiting, I think that area of the country is an underrated place in terms of available talent. Pennsylvania, New Jersey, you know, the Eastern Seaboard a little bit. I think they resonate there. They can get some quality guys from Ohio that don't go to Ohio State because Ohio is such a juggernaut of a recruiting place. I think Penn State, with the right quarterback and coordinator combination, as we've seen recently, can beat Ohio State. But it all needs to come together more than it has. So I think Penn State's the sleeping giant, just because the environment of Beaver Stadium, the name recognition, the recent history. I don't think they're sleeping. I think they're rousing.
Rousing. Oh boy, rousing.
But yeah, that's the clear giant. I mean, I guess you could also say that about Michigan, right? Like Michigan is not one.
So
let me
pivot to our last football question, and then I want to do rapid fire some non-football because we got those too.
I'm ready.
So get yourself ready.
Okay.
This comes to us on Twitter from Buckeye Stan.
Okay.
So we just talked about sleeping giants.
Correct.
He wants to know, which program is the most lovably average? Nowhere close to reaching the summit, but not at all dysfunctional.
Right.
Just always a fun out. Lovably average, Dan. If such term exists.
I still don't know if I understand the meaning.
Nowhere close to reaching the summit, not at all dysfunctional, and always a fun out. So I guess maybe a team that goes 7-5, 8-4 every year, plays hard, and...
Right. Is entertaining?
Is entertaining.
They're lovable?
Entertaining. There aren't rumors that they're going to fire their coach. Like, they're content with that.
I mean, just in terms of this, if we talk about the last decade, Ole Miss has been very fun to watch.
Right.
Right? Like they've had years where their offense was incredible and their defense was a nightmare. They've had years where both sort of added up and they were a New Year's Six game. You know, they fired their coach in entertaining circumstances, at least for me. Ole Miss has been lovably entertaining. As I mean, both Mississippi schools, really. If we're talking about just like a pure entertainment standpoint, definitely not going to challenge for anything more broadly.
You could make a case for Iowa. Maybe not so much from the entertainment standpoint.
No, not from entertainment.
But they are lovable.
Yeah. I think there was an element to Mike Leach Wazoo where you were just getting a lot of competitive, interesting games.
Right.
I think
this is
Utah.
A very difficult question.
Utah is interesting.
The Iowa.
Just because
of the West,
you know what to expect. Yeah, you know what to expect from Utah. They're going to beat teams who are just, they don't have their act together and they have probably a talent ceiling. But, oh man. I think UCF, recent UCF years, have been pretty entertaining, even when they're losing games. Sometimes they lose them like 50 to 49.
Yeah. Yeah.
Memphis is one of those teams. I'm trying to think in the Big 12. Oklahoma State has vacillated. They've played a lot of weird games. They obviously don't really get over the Bedlam hump, but there are a lot of competitive games. They lose games. Like, I don't know. There's something about the Cowboys.
I could answer TCU again here, frankly. I could answer TCU again.
The problem with both TCU and Oklahoma State, they've both fallen off a cliff offensively, which
offensively
hurts the watchability.
Yeah. And it hurts the lovability because
right.
It's frustrating.
In the
but
ACC,
very good question.
Louisville's really College? Down year. Boston College is not a super entertaining watch. They played hard last year.
What I think you find in the ACC is a lot of teams where you've got frustrated fan bases.
Pitt's played some weird games. Pitt might be
Pitt's,
my answer.
Pitt's probably the answer.
They've developed NFL players on both sides of the ball. And the randomly one year they'll have an incredible backfield. The next year they'll randomly have an incredible defensive line. They seem like they will beat a really good team and then lose to Duke or something. There is something about Pitt where they're always two-thirds pretty good. But that's never enough.
Never enough.
Yeah.
All right. Non-football question.
That feels like a 7-5, 8-4 team, right?
Oh, totally. 100%. Yeah. Non-football
aggressively
questions.
Competent. Okay.
Let's go rapid fire. Non-football.
All right. Here it is. Oh, I just hit a light. What is the most romantic gesture Ty has ever made?
Romantic gesture?
Yeah.
Dan
asked this question.
Dan Rubenstein.
Yeah,
this Dan seems Rubenstein. Like a Dan Rubenstein question.
Dan Rubenstein did tweet at his own Solid Verbal tweet.
Most romantic gesture.
Yeah.
Oh man,
Doesn't have to be for Solid Wife Kate. Ty, you had a life before you met her.
It's true. You can't ask me these questions without giving me a chance to warm up and think about it.
Really?
So, no, I can't think. I can't.
Did you ever throw her like a surprise birthday party?
Yeah. No, I did.
Okay.
Yeah, we had one of those chefs come in for a birthday.
Ty, that was incredibly romantic.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a great job.
There've just been so many. That's the problem. That I still need to really filter them down.
I still think you screwed up your engagement timing.
My engagement timing?
Yeah, cuz if you give somebody an engagement ring on Christmas and it doesn't work out, they can claim it was a gift cuz it was given on Christmas. Legally, I have no idea what I'm talking about.
Legally, right. It's okay so far. We're doing okay.
Yeah, you guys are great. Okay. What style of pizza joint is every Power 5 conference? I have no idea.
No.
I have no idea. But I'll answer a pizza question or two. What pizza oven should I buy for indoor personal use? Nicholas, just your regular kitchen oven should be, especially if it has a convection capability and it can get to 550 degrees, you can make, that's what I use. The big thing is I use a piece of steel. There's a company called Baking Steel, which is really good, but you can look up, like, it's called an A36 alloy. You can find, you know, whatever size fits in your oven. You can buy indoor pizza ovens, like countertop. I don't think you need them. If you are just a hobbyist and you're not churning out pies to sell them, a regular kitchen oven will do you just great if you put a steel in there. It's just a steel plate instead of a stone and like ceramic steel. Ty has got me hooked on making homemade pizzas. I think that means Dan.
Wrong person.
I'm humoring. Ty, any tips and tricks for an aspiring pizza maker?
I'll defer to you, Dan. Yeah. I cooked a Collie Power pizza the other day in my oven. And that's about the extent of any advice I could give.
My advice, make your own dough. Practice a lot because you're going to make a bunch of dud pizzas. And don't make same day doughs. Let your dough ferment. Buy a scale so you can measure out, you know, your flour and your water and your yeast and everything like that. And buy a steel. Buy a peel or two peels. You can get a wooden and a metal. Metal for turning and retrieving. Wooden for launch, and you flour it up. But just read as much as you possibly can and experiment. Just do it over and over. There's a technique to stretching dough and launching a pie into the oven. You just have to do it a bunch. If you look up, I think there's a blog that took a recipe from this guy, Tom Lehman, who's like a big, he's called the Dough Doctor, Ty.
Doctor, of course.
If you look up like New York, if you're interested in making like a thin crust pizza, look up New York pizza and Feeling Foodish. That's the name of the blog that I found this New York recipe. Feeling Foodish. And that's like, I've since adjusted it to like what I like in a dough, but that would be the move for me. Grate your own mozzarella cheese. Buy good, test out different cheeses because you don't want them to burn too quickly. And like Trader Joe's makes a really good store-bought mozzarella cheese, but buy a block of it and grate it yourself into like as coarse, thick shreds as you can. Buy crushed tomatoes, season it minimally with salt and whatever you like else in your sauce, and go from there. There are no shortcuts. Just
no shortcuts.
Read as much as you can. Ty, which college football coach would you most like to hang out with after an edible? So this is a question. D to the woo. Ask this question.
D to the woo.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
They're going to be mellow. They're going to be chatty. They're going to be insightful.
Right. I feel like a lot of people, the default answer for them is Mike Leach. Mike Leach is not my answer.
No.
I don't really. I'm over Mike Leach.
Yeah.
From this standpoint, who would I want to be around? I kind of would.
Well, you want stories, right?
You want stories. Mm-hmm. I would kind of be interested in Saban with his guard down, like a chattier Saban who has definitely seen some stuff, you know?
Yeah, but he's so hyper focused and he's been at the same place for so long now.
What about Dan Mullen?
Dan Mullen's an interesting answer.
Dan Mullen's a little bit of a wild card.
Well, he's got the Gainesville time as a coordinator during the Tebow and early Cam Newton era.
Right.
He's got the Dak era at Mississippi State.
Hey, it might be Mullen.
I think Lane is a great answer.
Lane's a great answer. I was going to say James Franklin. He could be annoying.
I just don't think the story, how many stories does he have from Vanderbilt?
I don't know. Lane's a very good answer, though.
I think Lane's a good answer given the Raiders and Tennessee and FAU and Bama as a coordinator and SC during the Pete Carroll heights and time with Sark. I think Lane's a good answer.
Kelly like in that setup?
Chip Kelly has the stories, right? Because with the Eagles, 49ers, ESPN, Oregon, now UCLA. I think Chip Kelly is relatively, and I don't mean this as an insult, I think he's relatively like low-key and boring.
Okay.
But he's a funny dude. He's a secretly funny dude. So I think it's a decent answer. I'm going across the sport, Big Ten. You know who I think would be fun? I think Paul Christ might be a good time. I'm serious. I think Paul Christ. Yeah, but you remember like the turnover chain my ass in the bowl game against Miami. Yeah, I think there is that edge to him, to Paul Christ, that I think could be fun. I was going to say PJ Fleck, but I think his appeal is probably the energy. So if you're bringing that down, I don't know.
Right.
Brett Bielema, I think, is interesting.
Brett Bielema is an answer, too.
Brett Bielema is an interesting answer. Going across the sport. Yeah, Paul Christ is an interesting one. Yeah.
Look, go on out to verballers.com.
Yeah.
That is the Patreon. That is where we post some of our bonus stuff. That's where you can get early access, not just to this show, but to every show now as we progress into the college football season. So the plan will be that we record all of our shows a day before they hit the public feed. Case in point.
Yeah.
On Sundays, you and I are going to connect up very early on. We're going to live stream our reaction show every Sunday morning for our Patreon folks.
Yeah.
And immediately following that stream, we're going to get our files together. We're going to mix up the podcast episode and we're going to post it. So even if you can't watch it live, if you are a Verballer, you're going to be able to listen to it on your super secret Patreon feed. For everybody else, it hits the feed on Monday mornings. But
6 a.m. Eastern, yeah.
Yep, 6 a.m. Eastern. But we're going to continue doing that all throughout the season. So Patreon folks are going to get episodes on Sunday, on Tuesday, and on Thursday. Everybody else gets them on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Same content, a little bit of a different timing because we're trying to do our best to help build that Patreon community and provide as much value as we can. So verballers.com is again where you can go to find out more about that and some of the other offerings that we have available. As Dan teased at the top, there is something else coming that we're very excited about. As you said, a very unique prize
status
that we've not seen, not seen offered anywhere else. And I could say that with utter certainty. Verballers.com, verballers.com, verballers.com.
Verballers.com.
Our website, solidverbal.com. That's where we post cool, fun, written content 3 days a week. You can also find all of these old podcast episodes. If you like what we do, please do go on out and leave us a 5-star review wherever you can. Every little bit helps here as we build into this new season in 2021, Dan.
Can I finish with D. Bolich? Final question.
Final question.
If Dan Rubenstein had to make one pizza to showcase his skills, what is he making? Quite easily. I'll probably do a thin pepperoni, shaved garlic, and spicy honey drizzle. I've been making a lot of that one. That's really been my specialty of spicy and sweet. I call it the Commodore. I don't know why, but the Commodore, I think that really showcases. My Detroit pie is also quite good, but yeah, that's what I would do. Same question for Ty Hildenbrandt. If you had to tell your story as an omelet chef, what omelet would you serve?
We would put some taters in the omelet.
Hold on. Tater tots?
Broken up tater tots.
Interesting. Okay.
We put some broken up tots in there.
Pre-cooked, crisped up.
Yep. We'd put some mushrooms. We put some broccoli. We put some Clearfield white American cheese.
White American cheese, broccoli, mushrooms, crispy potatoes. No meat. This is strictly a Thai omelet.
I could do bacon. I could do meat. But if I'm telling a story, I think that's a good story.
Do you finish your omelet with anything atop? Are you salting? Are you salsa-ing?
Use a little ketchup, Dan.
Ketchup?
A little bit of ketchup. Yeah, that's just for you, buddy.
Is that really what you do yourself 100%. An omelet?
It's true.
Do you ever, will you do a hot sauce? Will you ever, try something else to see how it works or just change things up? Sriracha?
I'm open to sriracha, but I have not.
Okay.
Have not done that yet.
Will you take leftovers from a dinner and turn it into an omelet?
I can. Yeah, and have. Okay. I've done that. Yeah, of course.
Ketchup atop mushrooms, crisped up potatoes, American cheese, and broccoli.
It's the good stuff.
Do you call it anything?
It's strange. I call it the Commodore as well. I don't know
the
where that
Commodore as well. On that note, thank you for listening.
On that note, for that guy over there in Chicago, my good friend Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildenbrandt over here in Eastern Pennsylvania, we will talk to you all in a few short days. Enjoy your weekend. Stay solid.
Peace.